Hi, this is the Dark Tangent. And the speeches you're about to listen to were recorded at DEF CON 6, which was held in July 31st to August 2nd, 1998, at the Plaza Hotel and Casino in old downtown Las Vegas. These speeches are copyright, non-commercial use, educational uses only. If you'd like to use them for any other purpose, please contact DEF CON at www.defcon.org or email to dtangent, that's D-T-A-N-G-E-N-T, at defcon.org. Now, some of the speeches were lost, so you're getting what we've got recorded. Now sit back and relax, and here comes some knowledge to your head.
So what we tried to do is design a system that had persistent cryptographically assured pseudonyms. The idea being that with all the profiling that can happen on the net, the fact that the net has a memory that lasts forever, there's a lot of privacy implications. I go say something when I'm 14 in a Usenet group, 10 years later I regret. It's there forever. There's the Christians in the crowd, the entire idea of Christian redemption gets wiped out by the internet. So if that bothers you, you need to have some sort of pseudonymity. There's also just separation. If I'm going out online and I'm doing job searching, I'm also dating, I'm also exploring my sexuality, whatever the issue, I should be able to break up those identities and be able to assert a certain level of privacy. And, you know, whether it's from government, insurance companies who start looking at anyone who's ever gone to an ACE website and decides to raise rates, whatever the case may be, there's a lot of possibilities for privacy invasion. So, we are Canadians. Beware Canadians who code crypto, because we have no export control. So this will be full cryptography, no escrow, and it will ship globally. And we also had to design a system that would support the architecture. There's not a lot of good in having a pseudonymous identity if when you go to a website to leave it in a mailing list registration, you leave your IP number. So this is what led us to the design of anonymous IP. Okay, the problem with designing this type of system. We have to distribute the system into many different parties. I don't want you to have to trust me with your anonymity. We know this from the Pena.fi remailer, for those of you who remember that and were online back then. You trusted Pena.fi. When Scientology got up and sued Pena.fi, then they had to reveal the identity behind it. So we don't want to end up in a situation where you have to trust any one person. So in designing the system, we want to distribute the technology so there's lots of different people. We also want to do that to protect against legal attacks or legislative. If government passes a law saying anonymity is no good or illegal, or if someone wants to sue, you want to make a distributed system so that it's impossible to isolate one person responsible. It's kind of like cash. You know, if you have cash, you can't go to a bank and say, as long as you're giving cash out, you're supporting drug dealers, because cash is used for everything. And so by making it a very distributed system, it's very hard to isolate, this is just a pornography tool. This is just a pornography tool, or this is just a tool for hackers. We're trying to get it distributed so it's a general purpose privacy tool. We also have to have the technical requirements for anonymous IP protocol, so that IPs do not leave your source information. And this led us to develop what we call an IP wormhole. Okay, so the product's going to be called Freedom. Please excuse the little dude. We refer to him as the Freedom Dude. We're trying to make this really approachable. This is something that you can walk into CompUSA and buy off the shelf. I want the people who are using Hotmail right now, because they're afraid to give up their email address, to use this, because it has full security. Okay, there are two parts in the product. There's the Freedom Servers and the Freedom Clients. Freedom servers are essentially anonymous internet proxies. They are carrying all the network traffic. If you're part of the Freedom Network Cloud, you participate and exchange traffic with any other Freedom server. We are distributing the servers free of charge. We have a number of ISPs who are already committed to run these, and we expect to get a lot more. And I'll go over in a reason why. Biggest reason, earn money. Run a server, earn money. Every month we take a portion of sales of the client, the pro client, we put it in a pool, whoever was rated as the best server, we distributed money to. So if it's costing you a T1, you can get that paid for. So if you want to support privacy, you don't have to go out and say, it costs me $2,000 a month, hopefully we can make it so that it's neutral to you. It doesn't cost you a thing to run a server. Okay, so some of the reasons, if you support internet freedom and you want to have just support people's rights, protect your users' privacy. FTC and the government is getting on really on top of online companies for not doing something about privacy. I don't think this is the solution they envision, but it is a solution. You can market your services as privacy enhanced. If you're competing and you're an ISP in a market, you can say we protect your privacy and the other ISP doesn't. Value added for your customers, reduce your liability. Most ISPs have huge problems dealing with abuse. They have two or three members on staff who deal with nothing than when one of their users got into an IRC spat and they have to respond to that. You know, this way, they're not the source for any of the traffic so that they don't ever get paid with their users' actions. And then, in the end, also earn revenue. For businesses, this is important. Okay, Freedom Server technical details. Designed for Solaris and Linux right now.
Yeah.
We suggest a minimum bandwidth requirement of around 256. A T1 is a bit better. If you only have 28.8 and someone's browsing through your 28.8 link, it becomes unusable. And we also do something called link padding, which Ian will describe in a second, which helps avoid traffic analysis. And that allows you to configure your bandwidth shaping. So you can say how much link padding you want to do or how little. Okay, Freedom and Client. This is what's interesting to most of you, I think. The client will allow you full pseudonymous email. You create a pseudonym, you can send and receive email with that pseudonym, and it's totally untraceable to you. Usenet posting. You can anonymously post and read with your pseudonym. Web browsing, totally anonymous. IRC, anonymous IRC. We do not support DCC in this version. Anonymous SSH. And what I believe will be very interesting, anonymous telnet. Because people using MUD should have privacy, and so we do support anonymous telnet. Okay, in the client, you create multiple pseudonyms in the form of pseudonym@freedom.net. So if you have a handle and want to protect it, you're going to go out and register your handle at pseudonym.net. And you can have multiple ones.
Three.
Freedom.net, which should be now registered to me. Client allows, you can set up any action. It's really transparent. We do this at the NDIS level. Okay, so it is completely transparent to the user. You can use all your existing applications and you just define. Whenever I'm communicating with Susie, I want to use pseudonym A. Whenever I'm communicating with Grandma, I use pseudonym B. And transparently, as it goes out your machine, it grabs it, switches the header, encrypts it with the private key of that pseudonym, chains it through multiple Freedom servers, and sends it out. Encryption and pseudonym handling is transparent, and the client initially will be available for Windows and Linux. We will be bringing it to other platforms after. Okay, I'm going to turn this over to Ian, and he's going to talk a little bit about some of the cryptography and the strength. Just to kind of preface this, we recruited Ian for this job because Ian is very good at what he does. And his experience with cryptography systems and some of the work he's done on this as part of his graduate degree is very, very important. We've designed a system at somewhat of a very great cost to us in deciding how much security to include to protect up to and somewhat including an NSA attack. So Ian will go into some of the details of that.
All right. So I do consulting work as chief scientist for this company, Zeronology. And it's basically my job to make sure the technical aspects of the system cause the system to perform in the way that... I have to make sure that the system performs in the way that often described. So the idea behind anonymous IP, for those of you familiar with existing anonymity systems, a one-line summary is onion routers and mixmaster on steroids. So basically what's happening is whenever an IP packet is trying to leave your Windows box or your client, whatever client system you have, it's encrypted a bunch of times and then sent through and then sent through a number of different hops in what we call the anonymous cloud before finally exiting to the final server. The packet, as I said, is initially encrypted in multiple layers, and each hop decrypts one layer, like an onion. And then the final server will get the packet in the clear and ship it off to the final destination. We also do things like bit padding, which makes sure every packet in the network is exactly the same size, so you can use size coincidences to track traffic through the network. This is one problem that, for example, the Type 1 or Cypherpunk remailers have. They don't do any message padding at all, so that if someone sends an unusually small or unusually large message through the Cypherpunk remailer system, it's pretty easily trackable if your adversary has the ability to monitor net connections all over the place. For example, if they have a tap at one of the bays. In addition to doing bit padding for packets, we also do packet padding for links. We do link padding, which is basically sending a data-independent bandwidth shape across each link in the anonymous cloud. That way, you can't correlate traffic coming from your client to traffic going to a server. So if you see, if you didn't do that, the adversary could watch a packet traveling from the packet from the client to a cloud and just watch packets go across the network and do some statistical correlations and figure out what clients are talking to what servers. And it turns out that's surprisingly easy to do. All existing remailer technologies don't do this, and they are susceptible to this kind of attack, including the Mixmaster stuff. Right, so in addition to sending the anonymous IP traffic, we support email as a higher level protocol, which is a special case, so that we can... how many of you are familiar with the Mixmaster type remailer system? So the idea of a Mixmaster system is you take a piece of email, you encrypt it with the same type of idea, you encrypt it in multiple layers, you break it up into some fixed size pieces, and send it to a bunch of nodes like this. Now the way to attack a Mixmaster system, well one way, is a legislative attack. You want to figure out who sent this particular piece of email. So you go to the guy that you received it from, which will be one of this last server here, and you subpoena his send mail logs or whatever. And assuming he keeps logs, many Mixmaster sites don't keep logs for this reason, but you get the previous guy in the hop. So you go to him and then so on. And it takes a while, which is why Mixmaster is considered fairly secure, especially if you don't keep logs or the first guy doesn't keep logs for as long as it takes to get subpoenas from the three different countries that the mail went through. The system's pretty safe. As I mentioned earlier, though, it's not safe if someone was watching the network while the mail was going through. So Mixmaster protects from after-the-fact attacks, but not during-the-fact attacks. So we try to protect against both, and a little bit stronger in that when the messages are sent from mail server to mail server, they're not sent directly, but they're sent, again, through this anonymous cloud, so that the last mail server, when you approach him to find out who he got this mail from, he has no idea. He got it from an anonymous IP connection. So he cannot backtrace and give you the next guy before him, and that gives you a lot more safety against after-the-fact attacks. The during-the-fact attacks, we protect, as I mentioned, by doing the link padding between servers. I'm sure there are probably some questions. What kinds of algorithms do we use? The standard stuff you might expect, two servers that are talking will be able to negotiate algorithms, and basically they'll choose between Glowfish, DevEx, or TripleDev, all of which are perfectly fine and strong. There are already questions coming. I'll take them quickly. Yeah. How do you send email to a pseudonymous person? Oh, and then how do they retrieve it? Okay, so it's just like, it's in concept the same thing as the current NIM servers, which is you send mail to pseudonym at freedom.net. The mail server at freedom.net basically looks up what's called a reply block. And what a reply block is one of these nested layers of instructions that say where to send this mail to. And so the mail will go from one mail server to another, each over an encrypted route, over an anonymous route. And at each step, the next mail server will decrypt the next layer of the destination, and it will go through. The idea being, only the hop closest to the client knows who the client really is, and only the hop farthest from the client knows what pseudonym this is. So no hop in the middle will ever know both things. For each hop, but you'd have to do it one at a time, because you won't know the next hop until you get it from the first hop. And it's not subpoenaing records. You have to get them to decrypt the NIM, the reply block. And what happens is the encryption keys, in an attempt to do forward secrecy, change pretty often. And the software knows how often they change. There's an expiry date in the certificate for the server, so it knows how often it has to update its reply block. Yeah. There's the record at freedom.net, but all it has is the reply block. And that's not useful information because it's multiply encrypted. It's just a bunch of encrypted nonsense. Yeah. Right. He makes them up. Yeah. And then he sets up a route by sending the encryption key encrypted with the server's public key to the server. There's a NIM server database. Sure, so it's the standard thing you do. You sign the server database, and the client-side software is configured with hard-coded, it's not quite, the simple answer is it's hard-coded with the key, the public key that's used to sign the master database. It's really not. There's really a couple levels of indirection before that, so you can do changing of these keys easily. But that's the basic effect. You're not protecting against the management of that. Okay, let's do this. So, okay, we'll just go on to some of the other non-technical issues, and then we'll take the technical questions at the end. Okay.
I suspect most of the questions will be for Ian, so we'll wrap this up very quickly and get him back up here. Okay, there's going to be a Lite and a Pro version. The Lite version is given away for free. There may be an annual charge. We're still trying to determine that what we call a network support charge. The cost to the people providing the bandwidth in the network is going to grow, so it may be something like at the end of the year you have to pay $5 into a pool to help pay for your bandwidth. We'll still determine that. The Lite version includes one numbered pseudonym. So your pseudonym would be 59728@freedom.net. If you go for the Pro version, the Lite version only includes email, Usenet, and a low priority web browsing. Your packets get dropped first if any bandwidth overruns start to happen. The Pro version includes IRC, Telnet, SSH. You can set up 5 vanity pseudonyms with it. You can also expand to more than that if you want. You can buy pseudonym packs that allow you to set up 10, 15. It depends how duplicitous you are and you know, how bad you suffer from multiple personality disorder, I guess. Okay, we are also, for the best in the audience going to be doing a site license for government agencies. This will mostly be intelligence work. The ability to communicate anonymously is very important for intelligence. So we work with the development team, which are a bunch of really bright guys, and they've been really working hard on to make this available to everyone. And we decided we know what we want for a government site license. First is $95,000. The second, we want to know who was on the grassy knoll. We want the truth about Roswell. And we want a tour of Area 51 for the development team. So if any federal government agencies are interested in site licenses, please come see me. Okay, we're going to be putting up white papers and a bunch of info. The release time is going to be sometime at the end of September. We'll be beta testing this, hopefully roll it out in October. I guess we'll go to questions now. Yes? No. This is application independent. It runs as a local proxy on your machine. So all outgoing port 80 traffic is met with a criteria. So if you say whenever I go to www.adultsite.com, I want to use this pseudonym and I want to use a route that includes four hops, I want my final hop to appear that my pseudonym is coming from the UK, and one of those hops needs to be EFF server because I trust them, you can set that up. And as your question regarding the source code, you're right. Right now we are not releasing the source code. This is a commercial venture. But what we are doing is we're having a peer review team.
Okay. So I'll yell. We're going to have a team working on reviewing the source code.
It's up? Okay, we're going to have a team that will review the source code.
That includes people like Bruce Schneier, Ian Goldberg, who are taking a lot of the prominent cypherpunks, and they're all going to do an independent code review, audit the source code, and we're also talking to people like the guys in the law, some other people to do code review. We want this code to be secure, and we're going to try and make it that way as much as possible. We will be accepting any help reporting fees. If you have a platform you want and you want the client, contact us. We'll work with you. We're really interested. We're trying to really say that this is a good form of digital identity. There's no reason why your real-world identity should have any correlation with your digital identity. So to do that, we want ubiquity on the client. We want it on every platform. If you want to go to for Amiga, contact me. I'm going to take that question in the back.
Okay. You said that when just about anything that it handles, it goes through, it encrypts it multiple layers and sends it through a passive, whatever. When your web browsing and stuff like that, is that going to significantly alter the time and the space you use to download a web page or anything like that?
Okay. Some of our initial tests show that on both modems, up to and including 56K and even ISDN, your latency is more modem speed related, and we far exceed the performance on that. Now, you are going to increase your latency by using more hops, but that's totally configurable by you. If you're just going to Yahoo, you may say, I only want two hops. I really don't need more than that. Or turn it off. You can configure it so it comes on and off as per the site you're going to. Yes. Yeah. The output funnels are configured to use a virtual hostname. So their hostname on the output funnel, anyone in the cloud, is company.freedom.net. So that will be the initial response. Now, for someone who's really upset about something that came out of the Freedom Cloud, let's say, and NetComm was running a server, and NetComm was carrying that traffic, they could look up not just netcom.freedom.net and send abuse to us email, but they could actually look up the IP address
But we also give all our Freedom Network operators a series of sendmail scripts and server scripts to redirect any of these complaints to our abuse management center. And so we don't want them to have a lot of support for this. We want it all directed at us. Dave?
But you can change the physical location.
So you can say, I want this pseudonym to appear to be from China. As long as there's a server in China, you will be from China then. So, and this is just theoretical. Let's say you're somewhere in Europe and you're trying to download a crypto-enhanced version of Netscape, and they're checking the source of your ID to make sure that ID you're using is inside the United States. You could just say, this session make my pseudonym be in California, and all of a sudden you're in California and you can download it.
So drop packets, just like ID packets can get dropped in the software or computer system, by not getting hacked. It only gets hacked when packets coming back to the internet will follow. Right now, we're following the same path as going there, where you have to connect the privacy system. We could set it up on the internet, but we're going to go backwards direction. But there is a little bit of a
on the ID stuff, essentially there is a SIN and ACID. We use, of course, full ID so that you can handle cross action. On the message, it's simply just a handling of messages. Now, what we do on the pseudonym side is, what if one of your servers in your reply block is down? This is one of the problems that the existing NIST servers are already handling. So by default, when you register your pseudonym, you have three reply blocks that are totally independent, that are constructed, that operate on three different servers, three different routes. So every email that comes in spawns three different emails going out, following three different chains. As they're coming in your local property, when you're checking with IMAP4 or POP-C, it only accepts one of those that gets delivered to your email box, it throws away the other two. That's right. You could add some sort of return to these words under this specific factor. It'll return the receipt to your pseudonym and that is reported to you.
Yeah, they're back here.
So right. Question here. The Pro version is going to run $50. Okay, so it'll be $50. That includes 5 pseudonyms. There will be an annual re-registration fee to keep your pseudonyms active, something on the area of like $4 a pseudonym a year after your first year. To protect against copy protection, it turns out just to do this system right, it has some really good inherent copy protection systems for the Pro version. Because what we do is we do token system to set up the pseudonym. So you have a token, you submit your token and say, I'm creating a pseudonym, this is a valid token. The tokens are one-time random tokens. So you can give out the Pro version, the binary, to as many people as you want. If you don't have a token, it's not a lot of good. You have to buy tokens. And because a lot of that is server side, it kind of deals with copy protection. Or there's another one sponsored by ourselves. you choose your own degree of trust, and you can construct your routes accordingly. The next one was a question about designing cryptographers' problem within the anonymous cloud.
Right. So for version one, we're not going through the cryptographers' network. For those of you who are not familiar, designing cryptographers' network is a way to, for a bunch of computers to get together and transmit information without it being possible to figure out who was the transmitter. For what we're doing now, we're just achieving basically the same goal by doing the chaining. We'll see how that works for virtual life, but since that's entirely a server-based issue, we could upgrade that at any time to a running cryptographer network without asking to change any of the lines. Question here.
Then the token or something that could be redeemed for a token will come to the block. If you
you just download it over the internet, then you'll have to do some kind of way to pay out. We haven't figured out exactly which way it will be. We will accept credit cards, and what we're going to say is that we're going to forget who you are as soon as we fucking can.
Right.
We haven't. We do not want any information about who you are stored anywhere on our server. Right? The abuse reports are just saying, right? We'll get the fact that a cool guy at freedom.net is sending spam, and then you can just turn off the internet. Right? We don't care who you really are. We're not going to send guys around your house.
Well, yes.
So we have no information about who you are. That's why.
Yeah, that's right. It's impossible for us to have a disability. This was on purpose. Because if I provide a disability to the federal government when they come to arrest a child survivor, then I also have to provide it to the Chinese government when they come to arrest a Chinese citizen.
Well,
that's the internet, you know? And I don't want to be in that position. I don't want to get dragged into court every time that some student does something bad. So we have a law enforcement kit that we're going to be sending to all law enforcement agencies that essentially says, if you wish to track down a pseudonym, here are your options. Convince them to meet you in the real world. That's a possibility. Okay? You have them quite often. Gain and trust, and that's what we need. Jennifer described a situation this morning where they met at the San Francisco Airport. Number two, get really good chumming with God and ask for a miracle. Number three, invent an entirely new system of math better than anything you know. That's really their option. Yes.
One thing to think about is really start to imagine some of the possibilities.
when CDC was talking about some of their stuff, someone asked the question of, can you get a report back about the IP number, where it's running? Have an email to a pseudonym. Internet gambling laws all of a sudden start to fall apart because you can't see where someone is going. So there's a lot of social implications, and we think this is going to make a little bit of a stir, and hopefully people start thinking about some of these issues. So, the question was, what's the business plan for running a server? Okay. My previous business was running an ISP, so this is a large part of our planning, is how do you make this good for an ISP, good for the people with bandwidth. It's going to be a combination of this. The revenue sharing program should make it a cost-neutral decision. So it's not costing them anything, it's actually supporting running. The benefits they would get would be lower their usage. My last company, we have 75,000 internet users. We had two people full-time on staff all the time who dealt with nothing but abuse by our users. So that would be a great incentive for someone to run it. Value added to their customers. They get a commission every time one of their customers upgrades from the freeware to the pro. They get a monthly check for being part of the network. And they deal with their privacy concerns. They can kind of say, we're common carriers. There's a bunch of legislation going on, like some of the WIPO stuff, where ISPs, the net gambling law, it makes ISPs responsible for blocking foreign gambling sites. Now an ISP is going to say, I'm just handling common carriers.
It's working now. Good. My voice is dying. Okay. Yeah, we are out of time. I'm going to take one last one over here.
How will you verify abuse complaints?
How will we verify abuse complaints? This is actually a good question. Each message as it leaves the pseudonym server is digitally signed by the private key of the pseudonym. So if someone trying to forge messages from the freedom.net domain, we can tell. It didn't actually come. Now, there's no reason why you would forge it. So when someone comes back, they can say, I really received this abuse. And we have different procedures. Depending on what the abuse is, for instance, if someone comes and says, this person is sending me harassing email, we will show them a script on how they can just filter out that person's email. Okay? We're not going to get into making decisions upon, you know, solving facts online. If it's a situation where someone is sending out spam, we can reduce their max recipients that they can send. If we have an absolute verified thing that this person is sending a lot of spam, we can just slow it down so he can only talk to 50 people in a day or 30 people in a day.
But it turns out that the issues aren't any different from a regular ISP dealing with abuse. The only differences are a regular ISP, they can terminate the account, well, plus it's the chaos, they can just delete it in.
But they can also send, like the cops after them. We can't do that. We have no idea who the cops are. The content. So the last cop, like this guy here, will see the content, of course. But I don't think we're going to want to go there.
Well, because the person they say some content, you have to take them on the word.
Well, no, because the content is digitally signed, right? So you can't forge email with this system. So no one, like a Scientologist, can't say he posted this if he didn't, right? That was totally a hypothetical example. Okay, I think we're out of time for questions. I'll be here for like the rest of the weekend for sure. And if you want to ask me questions, please feel free. Okay, on to the next topic.
Thank you.